Welcome, friends, to the Girl Mom Podcast. This is Carrie Kempakis, your host. Today, I have a very special guest from Nashville who I consider a warrior of hope. She has known some dark days herself, beginning when her now 21-year-old son was just 10 weeks old and diagnosed with stage 4 cancer. As a new mom, that is your worst nightmare. Yet Farrell Mason says it was hope that carried her through that darkness and also other dark days that included a miscarriage, several touch-and-go childbirths, delivering the painful eulogy for a dear friend who took his life, and dozens more funerals for people that she has loved and lost. As a part-time minister and grief counselor for Woodmont Christian Church, Farrell has walked with families through their worst nightmares too, and yet she still believes in hope. She often feels hope most when she's sitting at the bedside of someone taking a last breath. Her gift for bringing heaven down to earth reminds us that we are living for something bigger than what this world can see and walking toward a paradise we can't yet see. Farrell is a wife, a mother of 6 children, author of several books, and a podcast host. She has a Master's of Art and Business degree from the University of Manchester in England, and also a Master's of Divinity degree from Vanderbilt University. She recently released a fabulous new book called Soulful, a weekly devotional to nourish the mind, body, and spirit. And I highly recommend this meditative delight as a Christmas gift for anyone who craves a taste of heaven and needs a little hope right now. I wish I could put Farrell in my back pocket to have with me at all times because she has the most calming influence. But since that is not possible, I'm recording this conversation so we can all benefit from her wisdom again and again. Thanks for tuning in and enjoy the show. Well, welcome, Farrell. I am so excited this day is finally here. I've been so looking forward to this conversation ever since we chatted on the phone a few weeks ago.
Thank you, Carrie. I'm thrilled to be here.
Well, I've been reading your book at night, and I'm just like, as I read it, I'm like, this is how I need to be, and I just wish I had her voice in my life every day. But, I mean, I just know that your passion for hope and what you're writing about, I know that these are gifts that don't always come easily. So, you know, tell us a little bit about, you know, how did hope become your passion project? And I think it's interesting. I can relate as a writer. We all have certain topics that just grab our heart that we want to dive into. And we want to be this to be the thing that we're studying for years or talking about for years. So how did hope become that topic for you?
Well, I think it's what you began with Charlie, my firstborn son. I mean, reel it back a little bit before that. And we lived downtown during September 11th. And so that was kind of my first taste of fear. And kind of my life was rocked. In our apartment building, I think we had 10 people on our floor, and 6 of them did not come home and on that day. And so it really kind of rocked me. I'd come from this really kind of happy and calm, and, you know, everything seemed in the world that it was, you know, safe and happy, and the world kind of was my oyster. And that really kind of stopped me in my tracks. That was like the first, oh my goodness, like the world isn't maybe this whole happy place. And so that started. And then a year later on Christmas Day, Charlie was diagnosed with stage 4, a neuroblastoma. And so we spent a full year at Sloan Kettering in New York City, with him being treated. And yes, he's 21. He's a junior. Amen. Just celebrated his 21st birthday at Dartmouth.
Chills.
And he's doing great. And but that kind of, you said, you know, I had gotten my master's degree in London for the arts. I mean, that kind of was my passion. I love the arts. And so I'd come back to New York City from London and was ready to just start this career. And then we kind of, you know, got the news, and my life just took a sharp different turn. And so we had this wonderful minister in New York City that we would meet with every Friday. We'd go in his little office at the church, and he'd have a fire going. And he kind of took us by the hand and walked us through that year. I'm so grateful to him because we also had scenarios where, you know, people would just say, now knowing, the wrong thing. You know, just God only gives you what you can handle. And all of those like trite phrases that really, when you are on the edge of despair, they don't help you.
Right.
What you really need is someone to hold your hand and say, I'm here. I'm not going anywhere. And we're going to walk through this and we're going to be together and God is with us and one step at a time. And that's what we did that year, one step at a time. And we had a dinner kind of, I think we were 8 months through treatment with this wonderful minister, Tom Toole. And he said, Farrell, have you ever thought about going to divinity school? And I was like, what? What are you talking about? And he said, I really think you should consider it. I think that you, I think your life is getting ready to take a different path.
Really?
And so I came out of the womb as a spirit that when things are put in front of me, I kind of go with them. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if it's intuitive or it's just, I don't know. It's kind of a hands open, heart open to whatever's put in front of me.
Well, I was about to say, so he must have seen something in you
through that journey
with your baby.
He must have.
It must have been your open heart or your like curiosity about what God was doing. Or, you know, what do you think he saw in you that made him
I think that you know, it's a compassionate heart. Mm-hmm. And so I can remember being in the hospital with Charlie and, you know, you're there 8-10 hours a day. Sometimes you're spending the night. I mean, every day is different, but you're with all these other people that are being treated too. And I really wanted them to be okay too.
Right.
And so maybe he felt that in the waiting room or he felt that, you know, seeing me really committed to, we're all gonna make it through.
Right.
And I feel that like at a cellular level that I really like my definition of hope is that God is always working for good. Mm-hmm. That if we can just trust and be patient, that God will make a way. And so, so I applied to Princeton and was like, I'm going to Princeton. We're going to still be living in New York City and I'm going to go to Princeton and I'm going to commute. It's going to be great. And I kind of was like energized by it. Mm-hmm. It had been such a hard year.
Oh,
and this sense of, okay, I'm going to meet these new people and I'm going to study. And then David, my husband, was like, we're going home.
It's like
we're going back to Nashville. Yes. This is where my family is. This is where my friends are. And I think that's what we need right now in our life. We really need... we need a soft landing after this year. And so so we moved to Nashville and I applied to Vanderbilt. And so I went to divinity school at Vanderbilt. I was like the longest standing student at Vanderbilt.
So
because
did you,
in that
many,
period,
yes,
I had five work, more children.
Oh, that was, you had all your children.
Oh, I had all five
uh-uh.
in that period of time of also being
especially,
a divinity
school. Not just having the six children, but six young children.
Yes.
I mean,
yes.
That's such a time.
But I give such gratitude to Vanderbilt because, I don't know, again, maybe they saw something in me. We have these people in our lives, these like Ebenezers that see something and want to encourage you and believe in you and are patient. And so Vanderbilt was patient. And they said, she's gonna get this degree.
Wow.
She's going to get ordained.
So how long did it take
you?
Yeah.
Many years. I think it's a normal 3 or 4 year thing. And I think it took me like 8.
But I love that. And I think that's so amazing for the moms listening.
Yeah. I was
just that somebody like they, you know, other desires in their heart, and maybe they've been through a painful experience with their child and they want to bring purpose to it or use it for good outside their home, but they don't think they can go and do this in a year or 2 years. But, you know, it's just such a testament that God can help you accomplish these things at your own pace.
Well, and you know, I just am a believer, you know, the book is soul full. Mm-hmm. And so the full part comes from the Gospel of John 10:10, where Jesus says, I came so you would have life and you'd have it in full. And so for me, full, it's like got such an expansive definition of what full means. And I think what God is asking us is open arms, open heart to whatever is put in front of you. And so a lot of that is really beautiful, exciting, dreamy experiences. It's like rich relationships. It's adventures. It's nature and all the beauty you can take in. It's sitting around the table with your family and your friends. It's a yummy meal. But it's also heartbreak and obstacles and disappointments and setbacks. And it's your life thinking you're going one way. Oh, I'm going to be in the art world and I'm going to do all these amazing things with artists. And your life taking a completely different turn and being open to that and being open to, you know, we're not in charge. All we're asked is to be open to where God is leading us. And, you know, God's imagination is much wonderful, much more grand than mine. And so that, that fullness of life, you know, we have no idea how much time we're given. And I say kind of in the opening chapter that this book kind of came to life because I was sitting in the pew. I was performing at the funeral of my friend Izzy Wadi, who died at 40 of colon cancer. And she left behind these beautiful three kids. She was married to her soulmate. And she kind of said to me, "Hey, you got to make this count. You got to make every minute feral sacred." And so I kind of thought, I'm not sure I'm living the life I want to live. I know in my soul and my spirit the life I do want to live, but I think that sometimes I'm letting my life run me, and I know what is sacred, and I'm not sure I'm incorporating enough of that into my life. And being a pastoral minister, I now know how short our life really is, and the time is now. And so it's, again, it's like Jesus said, I've given you this life. Now go, let's go fill that soul up with all of it. And so fill it up on nature. Like, I'm looking out your window at this beautiful, you know, day that we have. And, but I also want you to fill it with courage and resilience. And, you know, I built you to resurrect and to rise when you've been knocked down. And I've been knocked down a lot. And it takes a lot of courage, stamina, perseverance, people that love you and they say, I'm not going to let you go. We're going to do this, to get back up and to keep moving forward to see what God has for us next.
I mean, you just said so many things. I'm like, what direction do I even go in? You know, one thing that stands out, like, that I love about your story, and it goes back to you having open hands and being willing to change course, but you had this passion for art, you know, and you probably saw your life looking one way with your art degree and maybe in the art world. But yet, as God, you know, changed your path, as he pointed you in a new direction, your art has still come into play. I mean, your writing is so artful, and then you're, you know, just the beautiful. I know you have four beehives, is that right? Yes. You're a beekeeper, among other things. I was reading her bio. It's like six kids, four dogs, and four beehives. I'm like, Harry, I don't know how she does this, and she's amazing. But, you know, it's just neat how you just find, that's your gift, is finding the beauty in the world. But you know that that art history and just your backstory in that world, how God doesn't waste any of it. You know, and that's so important for anybody young listening to this, that, you know, what if I don't find the right job out of college or choose the right career? But just do what you feel like God's calling you to do right now. And he's going to use it all, especially one day when you do find that big, big purpose. You're going to find that
so
all
triggering.
Those little things that you did in the past, that none of it was a waste.
I mean, I even see my son now, you know, he's a junior in college, and he's so stressed about what his career is going to be and even what his major is going to be. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I've worked at a flower store. I mean, I've had a myriad of experiences. Every single one of them was for a purpose.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I look back and I'm like, oh my gosh, God, all these different pieces of the puzzle that you knew and you were working them together. I mean, at divinity school, you know, you thought I'm going in the direction of the ministry, which I do. I do that part time. But at Vanderbilt, they had all of these classes where you could combine art and theology, which is what I ended up making as my specialty, is combining art and theology because of one professor.
Really?
Victor Judge. Like this, like, beacon for me. And I took a creative writing class for faith and theology, and he wrote at the bottom of one of my papers, "You should be writing."
Wow.
And so then that was God. It was like a big old billboard, and I took it and ran with it. And that would be my advice to my children and to anyone listening, is I really do believe God is giving us nudges.
Mm-hmm.
I think God is putting people in our path. I think God is giving us dreams in our hearts, but also major setbacks in our life to get us to a place.
Yes.
You know, God is moving us in a direction. And trust me when I tell you, there have been many times where I have fought and cried and screamed and thought, why in the world is this happening to me? Why is this the story that is being written? And I don't want this story. Mm-hmm. Like, I did not want my Christmas day to find out I have a child with cancer. I did not want to bury Izzy Waddy. And then, you know, just 2 years ago, my dearest, dearest, dearest friend, Talu, dying of glioblastoma. I mean, that was like such a major setback for me personally because she was such a spiritual influence in my life. She was the person I went to for faith questions, and she really gave a lot to my life. I think she gave so much more than I gave to her, and I feel terrible about that now because I'm like, oh my gosh, I could have been so much better. But I think, though, you know, Talu, who I lost, I mean, she's in this book, and I just really want to pay attention. Especially as I'm getting older, I want to still be so fresh and young in the sense of intuition and listening for God. And it excites me of what God could do next.
Yes.
You know, that I want to live in that space instead of being afraid. And I think that the world right now, especially, which is why I'm like, I've been waiting for Soulful for so long. I've wanted to write this book for so long. And it's like, there were so many doors that were closed. Mm-hmm. And now the door has been open. And I'm like, oh my gosh, God, you couldn't have waited for a more perfect time. I mean, I'm coming from Nashville and we are still grieving and suffering over the Covenant tragedy. That touched so close to home, like literally a quarter of a mile from my house. And where I work, family, friends, people that are so dear to me that have lost children. And this book, I feel like God was like, I'm going to give you a perfect time for a word of hope when it's really needed. And I feel like what's going on in the world right now, not just even outside of Nashville and Maine and in the Middle East, I think we all really need a big old nudge of hope.
Oh, I agree 100%. And that's what I told you. Like, there could not be a better time for this book. And I've always loved, there's a C.S. Lewis quote, and he basically said that, you know, we have to continually be reminded of what we believe. He said that, you know, no belief is going to automatically remain alive in your mind. It has to be fed. And he said, that's why we need to go to church and read the Bible and pray, because we have to continually be reminded. And especially of hope. I mean, people, I see it all the time in what I'm doing. I mean, just versus even 2 years ago, people are just desperate for hope.
Yeah, because I think, listen, you just step out your front door or you open your iPhone or you turn on the news and there, I mean, it's like crazy how many reasons that you should feel despair, anxious, fearful about tomorrow. And I think you're right. I think C.S. Lewis, like, in the container of your heart, you have to really balance the equilibrium of the sorrow and the joys.
Oh, that's good.
I mean, one of my biggest things is an inch of beauty a day. I think you have to fill with joy. You have to fill with beauty. You have to fill with things that lift your soul. Because if not, you know, this world is going to like crush our little spirits.
Right.
And God does not need that. God needs us to be shining bright right now.
Yes.
Brighter than ever right now.
Yeah. Oh, it's so true. And even, you know, as you're talking about Talu, your mentor, you know, it just makes me think about, I lost my mom 3 years ago. And we had a big scare with my dad recently. He was in the hospital for several weeks, and he's doing better now, but, you know, he is my rock. I mean, he's 87, but he's still the one I go to. I call for advice, and probably, I've always been close to him, but probably since my mom passed away, I'm even closer to him, and I call him even more because I'm at an age where I appreciate his wisdom, and, you know.
He's your love touch point.
Oh, yeah,
right?
He is my love touch point, and so, you know, when he was down, I mean, just that thought of losing him, too, and just being without my parents, and you're just like, how do I do this? Which is the season that a lot of my friends are in. But, you know, one way, I guess, what helped me after my mom passed away that I've kind of thought about it and reflected on it over the years. And I've just really come to the point where I'm like, I just feel so thankful that I've had them. And even with my dad, I'm like, you know what? Like, he spent his whole life telling me everything he knows. And I've really tried to just squeeze the juice out of it these last few years. And, you know, and a lot of times now I kind of have an idea of what he's going to tell me when I call him. You know, I might not know the exact answer, but I know him well enough and I've gone to him enough. And it makes me want to cry just thinking about it. But I was like, you know, one day I won't be able to, but I have a friend who had lost her mom, and she's like, but I can hear what my mom would tell me. And I was like, I feel like I've almost gotten to that point where I almost know what he would tell me before I even call him. And I think that's what the point is that maybe we can't give them what they've given us, but then we take that and we turn around and give it to those behind us.
That's true.
You know,
I feel Tulu speaking through me all the time. I'm like, that wasn't me. That was Tulu.
I love it. I love it. And what a testament to her faith and the mentor she was. And tell me, okay, so, and you mentioned, I know that you, with the Nashville tragedy, I mean, we were all watching that. It's just heartbreaking. And I know you're especially close to a lot of the families and just walking with that through them. I mean, there's nothing worse a parent could go through or anyone could go through than the loss of a child. So when somebody's facing a situation like that, like how do you talk about hope, or where does the hope come, or walk us through that process? If somebody is in the darkness like that right now, where would you start in counseling them?
Well, I mean, I wrote the homily for the funeral for Evelyn Dickhouse. And so it was the night before or the day before, 2 days before, I was just, oh gosh, you know, what am I going to say? What can you possibly say? I mean, I was driving in my car. I'm like, dear God, I have no idea how I can give a word of hope right now, because I'm not feeling it myself. Like, I have no idea. What do you say at this edge of despair? And that feels authentic, that feels like it will land on a broken heart and will feel like a balm to them. And God, you know, thankfully, so grateful, he gave me that line in when Jesus was in the Garden of Gethsemane. And it was like the smallest little line, but I was driving back from the funeral home, and it was just in my head, like, I should go back and I should read that piece, because I've never really written about it. And so what was going on in the Garden of Gethsemane when Jesus is at his worst? And it just says, and God sent an angel. And I think God's heart is broken when our heart is broken. Like, more so than even our, I think God is just sitting there just, oh my gosh, like, with such tenderness, how can I help that heart? And so I believe God puts people, sends angels. And I look at the covenant tragedy. And what I can tell you is that divine reinforcement was sent in. Mm. And that God just, like, it was like a rush of love, a rush of hope, a rush of people saying, I'm going to be with you. I'm thinking about, my dear, the Dickhouse family, who I've been so close with. And I said something at the funeral about that we're going to create this net. It came to me at like 4 o'clock in the morning. It's a net, and we're gonna catch them. We're gonna hold them. We're gonna see them through until the joy returns, as the psalmist says, until they find themselves in some sort of province of joy again. And they at that funeral, they took that net and they gave it flesh and bone and spirit. And these people just showed up for them and continue to show up for them. And so for me, that's hope with muscle. That is getting in there and holding people up because they've held me up so that you can take that next step forward. And a lot of times, I mean, hope is work. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, it is a belief. It is a belief that God is with us, that God is making a new way, that ultimately all will be well. All of that is belief, and you have to trust that. You have to trust God is with us. But then also, you have to work at hope, because, one, it would be so much easier just to put that white flag up and say, you know what, I don't want to be a part of a world like this. And I'm not even sure, God, I want to be a part of you.
Right.
Because you have broken me down to where I'm not sure I can put myself back together. And I think that that's when we have to step in for one another, right?
Yes.
I think that we have to, we're not here just for ourselves. And I call it the passing the baton of hope around the track. And there are moments in your life where you're going to be passing it. You're going to be giving people nudges of hope. And then there are going to be times on the track where you're like, dear Lord, please let someone bring me the baton of hope. Right. I need someone else to step in here because I can't do it by myself.
Yeah.
And that is what I'm witnessing in Nashville. I'm witnessing like a purity of love, a faithfulness to your fellow brothers, sisters, neighbors, that people, strangers, people are showing up in a way. And that's why, like, I don't watch the news. Like, I'm like on a, I don't know, maybe a forever fast.
Right.
turning on the news.
Well, you're in good company
because,
with that.
Because it breaks my heart every time. Mm-hmm. I feel it. Like when we lived in New York City after September 11th, every morning they would put on the warning colors. So you'd be at like high alert and it was like a bright red. And then there's like medium alert and it was the medium orange. And then the yellow alert and then like a fading into white alert. And so you would turn that on and like, that's how I'm supposed to live my day.
Right.
Knowing which high alert I'm in. And that's no way to, you're not going to live a soulful life.
Right.
Living that way. And trust me, with six kids, I could live fear to fear. Like I told you walking in here, I'm worried about a child in at Dartmouth and Hanover. I'm worried about a child in California. I'm worried about the four kids that I've got at home. And I could live fear to fear for sure. And I do sometimes.
Right.
Like there are Friday nights where I'm like, it's 11:15. And I'm like, where is she?
No. Or you're checking Life 360.
Let's get, Life 360 or she's driving. Oh my gosh. Okay. Getting home. So I have to work at it.
Right.
Like someone was like, I mean, you're just always, you know, like a hope fairy, and I'm not a hope fairy. I wish it was that easy. No, it is like bone, blood, sweat, tears, to be a person of hope in the world that we live in.
Yeah.
And you have to choose to live that way. And it's the only way that I think we're going to accomplish what Jesus wants for our lives. And I think Jesus wants us to, because Jesus did it himself. I mean, Jesus is like at parties. He was breaking bread with his friends and neighbors, and anybody that crossed his path became a friend, any stranger. Like he was arms open. He was appreciating nature, you know, mm-hmm. He was by the sea and seeing the sunsets, and he was really experiencing a spiritual life, a connection with that which is greater than ourselves. Like he knew that that was important, and he was intentional about it. Like we see Jesus over and over again, especially when he was in high stress moments, that he would say, okay, I'm out.
Right.
Don't come find me. I'm actually like pulling the ripcord. I'm going away from everybody, and I'm going to have some quiet. Mm-hmm. And but then also Jesus suffered. You know, he was betrayed by friends. He was betrayed by family. He was hurt physically, emotionally. We see him spiritually really struggling too. Mm-hmm. And I think Jesus did that because he wanted us to see, okay, this is what it looks like. This is you embracing the fullest life possible. And it's going to be pretty sometimes. It's also going to break your heart. It's also going to, it's going to ask a lot of you.
Yeah.
And I think that's what it is. You know, it takes a lot to be a human spiritual being on this planet. And, but I don't want to not be here. Like there's exquisite experiences that like light me up in every cell. And, you know, I just go to Radnor Rake in Nashville and I'm like, oh my gosh, I could be doing cartwheels. I can't now do cartwheels, but I want to do cartwheels on the inside. And, you know, I brought my 7-year-old Finn, who dressed up like Luke Skywalker last night with me to Nashville, I mean, to Birmingham, and just listening to him in the back of the car, it's like just filling me up with joy. Again, I go back to you've got this container of your heart. It's where your soul lies, and you have to take care of it. And, you know, I do deal with people grieving, and I think our instinct is to tuck in, to turn away, to get quiet, to shut the door, to lay the curtains down, mm-hmm. and what I've seen is healing happens when you do the opposite.
Yes.
And so, you know, you losing your precious mama, I mean, you have to open yourself and look at you. You're doing that. And it's the only way that that little heart of ours is healed is if we let people in, we let joy in. My last chapter in the book is Don't Postpone Joy. And the day after the Covenant tragedy, I was sitting in the backyard with Katie and Mike Duckhouse, and I said, hear me when I tell you, if you experience joy over these next weeks, over these next months, over these next years, it is God's gift to you.
Hmm.
It is a gift. You should not feel guilt. You should not feel shame. Just because you have a broken heart, this is the way God is healing you. So if you laugh, if someone does something and you laugh, like belly laugh in the midst of your greatest sorrow, that was God giving you a gift. And so we have to welcome the joy in the midst of the sorrow.
That's so good. I mean, and I'm thinking of families and people that I know that have lost children and loved ones. And you're exactly right. I mean, what I've seen from the ones who I feel like, you know, come out with hope and stronger, they're the ones that open up their heart mm-hmm. to letting people in. And I have one friend who lost her husband, and she was like, that was the advice that another widow had given her. She's like, if you don't let people in, they'll stop inviting you. So that was her She's like, I'm just going to say yes as much as possible. So she went on spring break with some family. She didn't know that well. She did at the end. I mean, they're families from school. I mean, but she just accepted so many invitations. And I was talking to her the other night, and I was like, you know, you were so easy to help. I mean, like, mm-hmm. she made it easy because everybody wants to help afterward, but you're scared to say the wrong thing, especially if you've never experienced that tragedy personally. You're scared to do the wrong thing. And so if you feel like you're walking on eggshells that you're not sure if you're going to get it right, you're scared to go over there. But she just made it so easy. And, you know, I would go to her house and she really wouldn't expect anything of us. She just would talk to us. And mm-hmm. she said it would help me to process it out loud. And so you just felt like you're being useful, even though you're not doing anything, just by being there and listening and not being scared to walk through that with her. But exactly. She really got so much support, and she still does. And she, you know, talks to people, other widows and other people who have had these losses about that same thing. But I remember her telling me once that she's like, you know, there are days that I feel like there's this dark pit mm-hmm. and I could easily just let myself fall into it and never come out. Mm-hmm. Like, she could feel that. And she's like, it's a fight not to fall in there, you know. And she's like, I let myself, she can compartmentalize it. She's like, I let myself have my moments when I cry and I grieve. I definitely feel all that, but I don't let myself go in that pit and never come out. And it just reminds me of what I heard a priest once say. It's a Greek priest. He said that the Greek word for crisis, it means crossroads. And I just think that's so true. If you look at any, you know, when you find out your son has cancer,
yes.
you know, it's a crossroads and it's a path. And when they say that Christianity is a fighting religion, it is. Like, you've got to fight to keep your joy and to keep your hope amidst all the sorrow and the brokenness in this world. But, you know, you have a crisis, it's that crossroads. Like, am I going to get bitter and, you know, lonely and just push everybody away and just stay angry at God, or choose that path where I might be angry with God and I'm wrestling, but I'm still, you know, pursuing Him, and I'm still trying to find hope and I'm trying to find joy and leaving my heart open to that. And I just think it's like, those are the moments, those little steps we can take can make such a difference on where you end up.
Well, and I think we need to be modeling it for our children too, because mm-hmm. I think that our kids are up against so much more. They're exposed to so much more heartbreak,
yes,
and crisis and trauma. I mean, just last week, my kids are in two different schools, and both of them went into lockdown because there was apparently a bank robber loose in the neighborhood. And I mean, they all got in the car, and I was like, you know, just kind of judging, like, how, and everybody seemed all right. But I think, you know, it's a lot,
right? It's a lot for an adult, and especially for them.
Yes, it is. And so modeling this, how do we continue to try to live in hope? The other thing I want to say, though, is, I mean, there were moments where I really struggled when Charlie had cancer. I mean, there were days I would come home from the hospital, and really that pit that you're talking about, like, you can get real close to that edge.
Mm-hmm.
And I think one thing that has always helped me is, you know, eyes open, ears listening, heart open, and really kind of just taking these little nuggets when I get them. I can remember we were in the thick of chemo for Charlie, and we really had no idea what the next day would look like. It could go really rogue and be a terrible day, and we'd be at the hospital like all night, or it would be one of those days where we came in the morning and then they let us go home at the afternoon. But I remember we had another doctor, Dr. Kramer, and she was like kind of one of the passing doctors. So she wasn't our main doctor, but every now and then she would come in and just check in on us. And she came in and she said, I think we were in, it was like in January. And she said, have you picked out Charlie? She did not ask anything. Have you picked out Charlie's Easter outfit?
Oh.
And just even saying, mm-hmm. have you picked out his Easter outfit? I was like, she thinks he's going to be here at Easter.
Right.
We should be picking out Easter outfits. And I ran with it.
Yeah.
I was like, that was a word of hope. And if the doctor's saying that, then I'm like, I'm going with it.
Yes.
I think we have to be so soft, right?
Yes.
That we hear these things.
I love that.
And we get these little, like, it's like little breadcrumbs, you know?
Yes.
That we keep moving. That one little comment.
Yeah.
It was like a game changer for me. I'll never forget it. As she walked out of the room and I was like, the whole room could have been radiant. Like God's light could have been shining in the whole room.
Yeah.
Because I took it as we're going to be all right. Like she believes we're going to be all right. So I'm going to keep doing the work. I'm not going to slide in the pit.
Yes.
But we also, it's so important to surround ourselves with people
yes.
that have us.
Yes.
You
yes.
know, it just, we have to have our people. And those people have to show up for us
yeah.
when we need them. And that means we have to show up for them. One thing I will say is when people are going through grief, you had said just a minute ago, like the number one question people ask me or say to me is, I don't know what to say. I don't know what to do. I feel like I've got two left feet, two left hands. I don't know what to do when someone's at such a terrible place. And you know what it is? All you have to do is show up. You are not saving their heart that day mm-hmm. by what you say. They will not remember. All they will remember is, I remember Carrie had that red sweater on and she was standing in the corner of my dining room.
She was there. I love that. That's
they will not remember a thing you said unless wow. you say something totally egregious, which zip it.
That's right.
Zip it. The other thing that I will say is, just from my 15 years of doing pastoral care, everybody rushes in on those first 2 weeks, right?
Right.
And what I would tell people is send a card in those first 2 weeks, show up at the house. But then what I really want you to show up is weeks 6, 9, 15, 24. And that's as simple as a text on a Monday morning that says, on week 15 or week 40, that says, I just want you to know, I'm thinking about you.
Mm-hmm.
You're on my heart. Because that's a breadcrumb.
Right.
Someone is living their own life and they remember that I'm still right here. I've lost my mom. I miss her terribly and I still have to pick up and go on with my life. But someone hearing that, I don't know, it radiates the room. Mm-hmm. And so I think that we especially in the South, we rush in and that's wonderful. But I really want to encourage people that remember, like put it on your calendar. Even more important is that week before Thanksgiving, that week before Christmas, because trust me, they're thinking about it. So you're like busy and doing your stuff, but the people that have lost someone, that's when you just drop a postcard in the mail and just say, I just want you to know I'm thinking about you. That's all you have to say.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to like write a whole theological treatise on, you know, hope or anything. You just need to say, I just want you to know I'm thinking about you.
Mm-hmm. And kind of what you're saying, it's just, you know, giving them something to run with. And when you shared your story, it reminded me of a friend of mine whose daughter was diagnosed with cancer at 2, and she's 16 now, like your son. She's doing fine, but it was scary. They did not know what was going to happen. But I remember Els reading her Caring Bridge, and I remember the story that she talked about when they were putting her port in.
Mm-hmm.
The doctor was telling her what they were doing, and she looked at the mom, and she was like, you know, we're going to put the port over here so that one day her bra strap will cover it up because it'll leave a scar. And she's like, she just looked at the doctor and just started crying because she's like, he thinks that she's going to
be here. Oh my gosh. I've got chills like all over my head.
And I think that's such a testament of like, yeah, you know, we're all busy. You might not have time to go spend 3 hours, you know, on a particular day at somebody's house, but you can send that word of hope, that text, you know, just something. And it made me think too, I've been wanting to share this story. I was one of my speaking events recently. She was telling me that it was right when her mom was not doing well and was dying, her husband got diagnosed with cancer. And this really struck me because you see women rush in, but you don't always see men have these kind of friendships. But she talked about how he had this great, you know, group of men at church. They got together, did a Bible study every Friday. And so she's like, they carried us for that year, just praying for him. But she said that she couldn't go to his chemo treatments because she was taking her mom to the hospital and her mom was basically dying. So she said he had three friends that would alternate each day. They would show up at their house, and this is what I love. They would have two cups of Starbucks, one for her husband, one for her.
Oh.
And then these men would take him to his chemo treatments. And I thought, wow, like something like that. Like, you know, we could all do that. And it's just that showing up and, you know, letting God prompt your heart and listening. Mm-hmm. That's usually those creative ideas when you think of something like that. That's when you know it's from the Holy Spirit. Like,
for sure.
You know, that asking, somebody texted me the other day, they were coming over here to bring me something. They're like, what can I get you from Starbucks? What's your Starbucks drink? And I'm like, that is so thoughtful.
Love that.
I know. Isn't that so nice? But I was like, just something so small like that could give hope to somebody.
By the way, at Starbucks, I mean, my favorite thing is they do the chamomile citrus tea. Have you ever had that?
No.
I think they call it like the healing something. I don't know, but they put hot lemonade in it.
Ooh.
Oh, yum. So good.
That sounds like a great something to
by the time I want that, I've already had two cups of coffee and a matcha. So I'm like, let's move into chamomile citrus in the day.
So somebody in Nashville, one of Farrell's friends listening to this, they need to bring you that tea.
I know. That
after
would be
they
great.
Hear this. That's awesome. Well, and you also shared so many good things in the book, but talk a little bit about the peacock story. I think that's such a good visual of hope and how God can take that pain and do good with it.
Okay, so when I was in graduate school in London, I lived near Holland Park. And in Holland Park, they had, I would jog in Holland Park. And they, it was like kind of like one of those crazy things where they just had loose peacocks in the park. So you would like run through the park and you would see them. And it was, they're beautiful. I mean, a peacock is truly extraordinary.
Gorgeous.
And yes. And I have this thing going with my husband right now where I really want a pet peacock. I want a pet peacock. I'm like, David, just imagine we drive up the driveway and there is that beautiful blue iridescent with the eyes pattern of the fan.
Yes.
And he's like, Farrell, they are the loudest birds. They totally make a mess. Our neighbors would kill us. No, we're not getting a peacock. But apparently, old wives' tale, farmer's almanac, I'm not sure, but they say that a peacock gets the beautiful feathers because he crunches on thorns. And so when I read that, I was like, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Like that metaphor is,
yeah.
There's a reason Flannery O'Connor, who's one of my favorite authors, she uses the peacock as the symbol for resurrection in her short stories.
Oh, does she really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Because the peacock, so this idea that, you know, we're going to have really hard things happen if we live long enough on this planet, and which means we're going to crunch on thorns. We're going to know the taste of thorns. But if we can allow that to transform us into something more beautiful,
right.
You know, I say that I think resilient people are the most beautiful people on this planet. Those are my people. Like, I love being around people that have had their hearts stomped out of their chest. And you meet them and they radiate.
Right.
You know?
And their perspective.
Like, I'm looking across the table at you right now and you radiate that glow and you have suffered and you've chosen to keep moving forward. And those are my people. That's who I want to be around. I want to be around people. And it doesn't mean that, like, you get your heart broken and all of a sudden you're like cheerleader, you know?
Right.
Oh my gosh, rah, rah, rah. No, 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 no. Like, we know the stages of grief. Like, we have to go through the heartbreak. We have to cry an ocean of tears. We have to be angry. We have to be terribly, scarily sad. You have to do all of that.
Right.
And then one day you say, but I want to be here. I want to love. I want to have beauty. I want to experience this world. I want to see what God has for me next. And so you choose to keep moving forward. And that's the peacock, you know? So God just like gives you that beautiful fan. You earn these feathers. You earn this sense of like what I would call true soul beauty,
mm-hmm.
you know?
I love that. Oh, it's so true. And I just think with Christmas coming up and our hearts are getting ready for the Advent season and the Christmas season. And, you know, that's always been one of my favorite Christmas line is the thrill of hope. I mean, as soon as I just play that over and over, I just love that line. And just, I think that's something to cling to no matter what. It's just that hope. And so you talked about too, how sometimes when somebody's grieving, when they're going through a hard time, you give them a hope box, which I thought was a beautiful gift. And so I'd love to hear what you do, your idea about that. I think that you give them maybe 7 gifts in this hope box.
Yeah, because I feel like, you know, it's all in good when you're out and you're with people and you're kind of putting up the front, you know, fake it till you make it. And you're like, I can do this. Okay, I'm going to the grocery store and I'm going to have lunch with my friends. I'm going to do it. It's like when you come home.
Mm-hmm.
And so the first hope box I ever made was for friends who lost their son to suicide. And he was in high school. And I just was like, I don't even know how she like gets out of the bed. Like it was like a devastation beyond devastation. And so I thought maybe if I could give her little tiny things that she could do that when she's in that room by herself in the house, in the quiet house, that she could start just doing little things. And so I made her the first hope box. And in the hope box, I put a prayer that I really love that has helped me. I put some prayer beads because it's the tangible, you know, mm-hmm. Christian rituals. I mean, they are good.
Yes, there's a reason.
You know, there is a reason.
They've survived
because,
for thousands of years.
And so some women at the church who I love helped me make these prayer ropes. And so there's like, I don't know how many beads are on there, but that you can either, I set out like some prayers that you can read and you rub the bead as you're going through it, or you can read a psalm or you can pray individually for different people. The idea is these tangible actions.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, I mean, hope is work. And so when we find ourselves on that edge, we need help.
Yes.
And so the idea of the hope box was different ways. I think I put in, I've spent many times going to Lourdes in France as the healing site. And so I think I put a little healing water in there.
Oh, wow.
And just the idea of, for me, it's like marking yourself with the cross. I'll go visit people and do that with the holy water. More, it's just an invitation to say, God, I just need you here right now.
Yes.
Please. Yeah. Close as my heartbeat, near as my breath. And sometimes we just need little nudges to ask God to be with us. So anyway, that's the hope box.
I love it. You know, and I just think I've learned this in my life too, that I can be a very anxious person and I'm a planner. You know, I always thought it served me well in a lot of ways, but what it does do that's not helpful is it can make me just live in the future. And I think that's what steals our hope sometimes, is that your child has an issue or you've got an issue or you're waiting on a diagnosis and you're projecting. And now we have this beautiful thing called the internet where you can go Google.
Yeah, that's terrible.
And, you know, we've all been on there Googling something and then you're in tears thinking, imagining some tragedy 5 years down the road from what you have today. And, you know, one thing I often have to tell myself is, you know, God is found in today, you know, and the enemy wants us to dwell on the future. He wants us to either, you know, have this fantasy of what it's going to look like so then we can be majorly disappointed, or to just be anxious and fearful. But, you know, we're going to find God in today, which is why those gifts that you give people, just mm-hmm. the beads, the prayers, just grounding yourself in today, looking outside at nature, enjoying your baby's smile or whatever it is, those joys in today are so important because it helps us feel God's presence.
Right. And I mean, Jesus says it over and over again. I mean, you're not going to gain an extra day by worrying, right? And I think that actually, you know, it grounds us. I say it grounds us and it kind of gives us wings to live just right here in the present. Not much help looking back. But I do believe in confession. I feel like, you know, us confessing our shortcomings, our flaws.
Yes.
You know, I think one of the things I've had to learn in my own life is the importance of forgiveness. You know, when someone has hurt me down to the soul level, like not hurt me saying, "Farrell, you look tired at church after I've just spoken," or, you know, "How old are you?" or, you know, commenting on my age or anything like that. Not that kind of hurt, because those are surface things. No, when someone actually hurts your soul,
right,
and letting that go. And forgiveness is like a huge part of healing.
Yes.
And we've all had people, especially the people that are in our closest circle, that hurt us, because that hurts the worst. And really having to work through forgiving and letting go. Because I know in my own life, like when I've held on to stuff, held on to a hurt, held on to a person,
right,
and not let it go. And boy, can you take that with you everywhere you go.
Yeah, it takes a
years.
Joy. Yes.
You can carry it around.
I know.
Right?
I know. And you
years.
See, when you get to be where we are, you see the long-term impact of the snowball of that.
Oh,
that not only is that animosity toward that person, it's going to seep over into other relationships. And
for sure.
And I've found that too. When I'm angry about something or upset about something, even if it's something I'm reading on the internet, and then I'm snapping at my kids, I'm like, I'm bringing that hostility into my family.
Oh, it just spills out all over your life.
And it's hurting my relationships, stealing the joy. Yeah, it is. It's a fight.
Well, and I mean, Jesus is, you know, funny and clever and just knows us, humanity, so well. Because, I mean, I think that's why he said, it's not seven times. You have to forgive.
Right.
77 times.
Yeah.
And I do think, you know, in my own personal life when I've been hurt, I carried it around for a while, and I ruminate on it,
right.
And I would think about it, and I would go on a jog, and I'd be replaying how the person hurt me, and what I wanted to say, and all of those things that we do, because we are human, and we have these tender hearts. But what I've realized is it takes away from my capacity for joy.
Yes.
And so the more I hold it,
that's good.
Then there's no room for the joy.
Yeah.
And so I gotta get it out. And, for people that have really been hurt, I say, you know what? Every time that person comes up in your mind or your heart, or you replay, I want you just to say a prayer for them.
Mm-hmm.
Like, say a prayer for them. Like, something good for them. Say,
right.
Say something for them. Not about you. Them. And you just keep doing it.
Yeah.
And it might take 77 times. Or it might take 77 years. But just keep doing it. Every time that person comes up, instead of you ruminating, I want you just to say a prayer, release it, and then move on. Eventually, there's going to be that space for joy.
Yeah.
You know?
And you will appreciate this. I'm actually reading a book right now. Somebody asked me to endorse it. It's a Greek priest, Greek Orthodox priest. But he is, I think it's the seven conversations, basically, that Jesus had from the cross. He's taking his final words. He's like, obviously, if Jesus said these things while he's up on the cross, they are important, and they're important for us to take to heart. And the first one is on forgiveness, when he's saying, "Lord, forgive them, for they know not what they do."
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, that is a brilliant concept for a book, first of all.
Yeah.
But how powerful to really think about. Okay, if you want to just like settle your soul on a few things that Jesus said, I mean, just really think about the final things he said on the cross. And it's so hard, but... You're right. And I think part of learning to forgive, and I've learned this in my life, you kind of know what friends or what people are going to validate whatever you want to hear, you know?
Right.
So you have to truly want to forgive, and you have to truly want to grow in a healthy direction, Christ-honoring direction, because it's very easy to go get the advice from those friends who, you know, they'll tell you, "Oh, just stay mad. You're a total reason," you know? And that's the advice you're given, and that's what you're hearing, and it's just reinforcing what you're already doing, and it's not going to help. Or, you know, you've got to have those people who speak the truth in love and that are in the Word and they know God, and the Holy Spirit can speak through them to help you. Okay, how do I do this impossible job of forgiving what feels impossible right now?
Well, and my kids, I laugh because they all did Montessori a Montessori program for their beginning before they went to big boy and big girl school. And they have the ritual of the peace rose. So, like, if the five-year-old has done something wrong to another five-year-old and they know they've done something wrong and the other five-year-old is crying, that you go over and you take the peace rose out of the vase and you walk it over and you give it to the other five-year-old. And, you know, I in my own life, when I was having a hard time with a relationship, what I realized is when I jog at Radnor Lake or at Percy Werner Park in Nashville, that's like when I get my thoughts for writing.
Mm-hmm.
And so those are the creative ideas for sermons or for a book or for anything. And I realized that I was not using that time for my creative. I was using that time to think about someone that had hurt me.
Oh, that's good.
And so one day I was jogging. I was like, you know what? This has to stop right now. Yeah. I have not written one good sentence.
Right.
You know? And so I did a big girl peace rose, and I just said, you know what? It has to stop right here, and I'm the only one that's going to stop it.
Wow!
And so I'm taking the peace rose.
You did? Okay. So how did that go?
It was a super humbling experience, but it set me free.
I
got back in the car and I was like, you know what? I'm not doing it anymore. I'm free.
Yeah.
I've let it go.
Yes.
I'm just letting it go. And sometimes we have to be the one to do it. Even if that person has hurt us, we have to just say, no more.
Yes. You know, in Alcoholics Anonymous, I have a friend who did that program, and she says it's called sweeping your side of the street. Have you ever heard that?
No,
I
that's
love
good,
it.
Though.
But she's, you know, she'd be like, okay, like I'm sweeping my side of the street. You know, this other side of the street, my husband's not doing this, or his ex-husband's not doing this, not doing that, but that's his side of the street. I can't worry about that, but you're sweeping your side of the street, and that's okay. I owe an apology for this, so I'm going to go say I'm sorry for this. I can't control that they might not forgive me or that they're not going to give me an apology, but I'm just going to focus on what I can control. And I always thought that's such a good visual, is just, you know, and I really think that's where peace comes. It's like, okay, God, you know my heart, you know I'm trying, I'm just, tell me what to do. I'm going to do my part, even if other people will not. But, you know, and I do think that those are the moments when he can give us peace in our heart and help us live at peace with him and with others. And
it's
then,
so
you
true.
Know, and you never know with that relationship. In this book that I'm endorsing, that's what it talks about, under forgiveness. And it's like, I've thought about this before, but just reading it, I'm like, this is so true. He's like, you never know. You can't assume that other people are in the same place on their faith journey or their life journey as you, or that they had love growing up, or that they have, you know, they might have a difficult personality. Maybe they never had anybody help them, teach them how to cope with that personality, that you just, people are at different points in their journey. And so how you might handle something is different than how somebody else might handle it.
Well, and it's also about, you know, soulful. It's about taking care of your soul, your
mm-hmm.
soul.
Right.
Because you're right. You know, if my soul is not in a good, healthy place, then definitely it's going to affect poorly to my husband and my children and my friends and my work and my creativity and my church and all of these things. And so I do think it, in some ways it's almost a selfish endeavor.
Mm-hmm.
Just go forgive them.
Yes.
It's going to help you, you know, so much.
That's so good. Well, one thing you said earlier too, Farrell, that I just, when I read it in your book, I'm like, wow, that is so powerful. And it's so true. But you said that God created us to be resurrected. And I think that visual of like that resilience of, okay, we're knocked down, we're facing these battles, but to resurrect. And it might take time. It's not going to be immediately, but giving ourselves time. But let's talk a little bit about the role of prayer in that process.
Okay.
And I guess, you know, a lot of people don't know how to pray. When you're facing a hard time, your mind is so cloudy or you're so scared, you just don't, you can't even think of what to say or what to think. How do you advise people?
Well, I think it's interesting because, I mean, I think prayer, you know, it's kind of it can feel kind of stressful, right? Is what do I say? You know, do my words sound good? Am I saying what I should be saying? And I always say, one, I think we've talked a lot about, like, what does it look like to live in hope and that hope is work. But I think the one thing that's the most important is it takes God. Like, we have to have a connection with God.
Mm-hmm.
And so for me, I feel like prayer is kind of the language of our soul. And when Charlie was diagnosed and we baptized him in my parents' kitchen with like a teacup.
Oh,
and
wow.
Afterwards, my minister at the time, he said, can I just talk to you for a minute? And so he took me back into my parents' study and he said, I want to give you a really big piece of advice. I want you to regularly go into your bathroom, turn on the shower. You can get in the shower or just leave the shower running, and I want you to speak exactly how you feel to God.
Mm.
And so that means you're going to probably say some bad words, Farrell. and some unholy words.
Wow.
But I want you to say exactly how you feel. I want you to be so raw and so true and so vulnerable. And he said, I bet you're going to cry. And I bet you're going to raise your voice. And that's why the shower's on. And I need you to just completely bare your soul. And it was life-changing for me. Because I think as a kid, I would just like pray for mom and dad and that the world was okay. And that we're going to have a good day tomorrow. And really what he was telling me is God is your friend and you need to speak truth and you need to tell everything, how you're feeling. And so that changed my whole life, because all of a sudden, not only did I really invest in that soul-to-soul conversation with God, but it just wasn't like pretty, polite, ritualistic prayers. Now, this is, I am afraid. I am terribly afraid right now. I am so worried. I do not know how to put my next foot in front of the other. I'm kind of angry at you, too. And I'm afraid, like, where are you? Like, I don't feel you. You do not feel like you're in the room with me or in my life. Mm-hmm. And I feel alone and I'm scared and I'm afraid. And I need you. I need you to step up, step in, be right here with me. See me through this. Please do not leave me alone. And really, like, speak in your heart. That's the only way that you're going to get a glimmer of that peace beyond understanding. Right? Have to, like, get in your bathroom, that white tile bathroom floor, and you have to speak your truths. And then you don't feel alone. And then you can, like, I think you come out of the bathroom and you can put one foot in front of the other. And I don't know, it strengthens that relationship too with God, because you're telling God stuff that you would not tell anybody else.
Because anyway, we're scared. We're trying to meet with people. You're like, I might push them away. They might not. They can't handle it. Right. But God,
and
knowing
you don't
that He can handle all of that.
Burden other people. Right. And so you feel this sense of, I'm not sure I can unload all of this.
Right.
And I've got children that are watching me, and I've got a husband that needs me, and I've got a church, and I've got friends, and I've got people that are suffering so much more than I'm surfing right now. Mm-hmm. But I still know what's on my heart. And I know I feel stopped in place. And I know I feel afraid. And so I've just got to unload.
Yeah.
And the thing about it is, there are moments where I don't pray. I get into my life and I'm like doing the jobs, and I'm being a mom of six kids, and I'm working at the church, and I'm writing, and I'm I don't stop. And I feel it. Like, mm-hmm. I totally feel it.
Right.
And I think my kids feel it. And I think everything suffers for it. And so, gosh, thank you, Jesus, again, for showing us how to do it. We have to step away, and it has to be super private, mm-hmm. and it has to be super vulnerable.
Yes.
And super authentic. And then when you get into that place where you're doing that, mm-hmm. you do feel peace.
Yeah.
It comes. It just does.
Well, you always hear about, sometimes you read something in the Bible and you're like, okay, but how does this apply to real life? And so Jesus is like, give me your burdens. We know that we're supposed to give our burdens to Him, to unload our burdens. And like what you're saying is a prime example, because if we're going through a crisis and we feel like we have to be polite with God, that's a burden. I can't handle one more ounce of guilt right now, but I feel like I got to do this a certain way. But like to truly know that He wants to take those burdens, like that burden of feeling like we have to get it right and we have to be polite, that we can't really be honest, that we can't be true and authentic, like that's a burden. And so I think when we get in that relationship with God, that we can like truly speak that way. And I'm like, wow, I feel so much freer and
so
lighter because
I'm not carrying it by
myself.
And
I want to come do it again. I want to come talk to you again.
Well, and the thing about it, I said, sometimes that I'll go through my life and not pray. And I feel like that's the most beautiful thing about God is mm-hmm. there is no judgment.
Right.
Like God is so grateful when you show up and bare your heart.
Right.
And so I included 52 prayers in the book because I wanted it. I put it in the first person because I wanted you to read them. And it just gives you this like little nudge. Okay, so I'm going to read this, and then I'm going to continue with my own.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So she's, yes. Farrell's nudged me,
right.
And everything she's saying, because she's a human being just like me, she's feeling all the feelings that I'm probably feeling. And so she started me off, and then I'm going to make it super personal
mm-hmm.
from there. And, you know, we just can't do it without God.
No.
And Jesus couldn't do it without God. And so, you know, we have to choose to be brave. We have to choose people in our lives that will support us and show up for us. And then we have to lean in to God, and we have to be wide open, mm-hmm. right? And that's like, you know, if you're going to say some unholy words, you're going to have to say some unholy words yeah. to God.
Well, I guess
God,
if you're chewing on thorns.
Yeah, chewing on thorns, that's
And you know what else I thought about too? It reminded me of St. Paul talking about the thorn in his side that he's begging yeah. God to take away, and he wouldn't. And so he had to live with it. But God's strength was made perfect in his weakness. And so I just thought about that with the thorn, that we all have these thorns in our life or something that we're dealing with that we're begging God to take away, and he might not be at the time. And so we're angry and we're frustrated. And
well, and I'm stubborn. I mean, like I'm the first of six girls. I'm a can-do, will-do person,
right.
you know,
right.
and I run a big old ship at my household. And so, I mean, how naive I am that I think I can handle it all on my own. And I can go like a good measure around the track, trying to control everything,
mm-hmm.
crossing my T's, dotting my I's. I can handle this. Until I realize, like, no, I can't.
Yeah.
You know, I'm unraveling at the edges. I'm hardening. That's what I always say, like, Farrell, you're always better when you're soft.
Mm-hmm.
Like, soft on the outside, soft heart. And when I'm trying to control and I'm trying to push that square peg into the round hole,
right.
I'm hard.
Right.
God can't do anything in my life. I'm messing up, clearly. And so I need time with God to be soft.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And I think, you know, I don't pray kneeling beside my bed at night because I am plumb tuckered out
right.
at night.
Your mom's
so
six
I'm
kids.
Not get yeah. Yes. So I think it's like
that's good
have
for people
the
to hear.
Freedom to choose yeah. like when you talk to God. And let it just, like I say in the book, let it be a rolling conversation. So, like, you could say, like, one sentence when you're having your cup of coffee.
Right.
Like, dear God, I'm worried about this. Please help me. And then you can move into the pickup line, and you could say something else. And
right.
then you could, you know, in the bath at night when I'm having my Epsom salt baths. That's another time. For me, it's usually takes place when I'm in nature and I'm moving.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like that's... It's almost like I have to sweat a little bit, and then I can release and say, okay, God, this is what's on the heart. This is on the agenda right now. But I think we need that.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. And I feel that same way. And because I'm your same personality, I'm like, sometimes it feels like a robot, you know, but I'm like, I got to keep going. I got all these things to do. But I think about that's one thing I miss about having little kids. I was like, my babies. For the 10 years that I had a baby on my hip, it kept me soft. You know, like
yeah.
if I was getting hardened.
Why do you think I had so many kids?
I know, exactly. I'm like, I need some babies to hold. But there's something about babies, and that's, you know, they're just a hope in itself. But there's something about putting a baby on your hip, even if you're mad or angry. It just, it softens you. It automatically brings you down. And I've thought about that as my kids have gotten older. I'm like, I need the baby on my hip, you know,
yes.
maybe not my own, but.
Grandbabies.
The grandbabies, that's right. That's right. I can't
well,
wait when the days
I,
come. But yeah, for God to keep softening us. I love that.
Well, I'm working on a wedding for this weekend that I'm doing that I'm super excited about. I don't normally do weddings because, you know, with six kids and the hustle and bustle, but this one's an extra special one. But I was reading in Romans, and I have gotten, it's like a little kid who's been given some new piece of candy in the candy store, but I've started doing the translation, the Message, which we talked about earlier, Eugene Peterson's. And this scripture I love so much, it's Romans 15:13. Oh, may the God of green hope, green is my color.
Mm.
And I love that green hope because it's like, it's always blooming. It's always possible. It's like green just for me is like growth. It's alive. So he says, may the God of green hope fill you up with joy fill you up with peace so that your believing lives, filled with the life-giving energy of the Holy Spirit, will brim over with hope.
How beautiful is that?
I mean, like, mic drop. Oh, we could just end it there. That is beautiful.
I'm like, I feel like for the wedding, I just don't even, green hope. Yes. But then I love this idea of brimming over.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
It's and like, you're like, God, that needs to go, like, in the hope box. What's green?
Oh my gosh. But, yeah. I just discovered this yesterday.
I'm stealing that. That's, I know. So good.
Romans 15:13, the message.
The message. Okay.
I know. I'm kind of nerdy like that. I get such a kick out of reading other translations.
Yes, I do
too.
So
like, I'll look at the Catholic Bible. I'll look at the NIV, the NRSV. But this one is like, golden.
Yes.
But anyway.
So you're using that for a wedding this
weekend? So I'm using for a wedding. It's like a really special wedding. And I write about this in the book. I think it's the Jenga chapter. But I was called over to this family's house. The mom had fought such a courageous battle against breast cancer. She has three young children. And so I got in the bed with the kids and helped them say goodbye. And I mean, I left the house and I was like, one of the Jenga pieces just kind of unloosened for my foundation, because it was heartbreaking, devastating, tragic. And 3 years later, this dear love, Thurston, the husband, he lives with open arms, open heart. And so he went on, I think, Bumble.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the one.
Yeah.
And he said, oh, I had lots and lots of coffees. He said, I think I had 50 coffees before I met Haley.
Oh, wow.
And then he met Haley, who's never been married. She is a big time, like, superstar professional in the healthcare industry in Nashville. And they met and, like, instantly knew there's something here.
Oh.
And so they're getting married. The key part for me of the story is, so I did the funeral for Tanya, the wife, and their son Isaac has Down syndrome. And he got up to speak, and all he said was, I love my mama, and my mama loved me. And then he got back down and sat down. I mean, tears. I was like, oh my gosh. So Haley grew up with a brother with special needs. And so it's like, God, he just... If we'll just breathe, if we'll just trust, if we'll just make peace with God's timing, God's going to heal us. God's going to put the puzzle pieces in place. And I just know Tanya's smiling like, oh my gosh, you have given Isaac a mama who has a loving, peaceful, tender, understanding heart to be his mama here on earth. And and so I'm like... I mean, they're going to, like, I feel like I should wear a cheerleading outfit to the wedding. Like,
no.
This is it. This is God working for good.
Yes.
Right here. This is it. Here we are. So anyway, I'm super excited about it.
Oh, that's amazing. I mean, I just think we should end right there, because it doesn't get better than that.
I know. People should actually, they should go look this scripture up. And now you don't even have to, you can go look it up online.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you can do all the translations. Yes. I know. And you can click for the different versions.
Right.
And then you need to look up this scripture. Maybe I'll read it one more time to end us off.
Yeah. Well,
should
I? Do you mind doing that?
And yeah, then, absolutely.
You mind, and then
you should print it off.
Okay.
And then do you want me to read a prayer from the book?
Yes. That would be
great.
Would
that be good? So that
we'll
you'll
do
get
that.
A little,
we'll,
a little,
I want
a
you
little
to,
touch
to,
of the,
you're going
to
close us out.
Okay.
You can read that verse again and then a prayer from the book.
Okay, great. So let's see. I'm just going to open up. I don't know. I'm just going to flip randomly to a prayer. Let's see. Okay, I'll do one from chapter 2, which is the title is Finding Eden. But first, we're going to go back to Romans chapter 15, verses 13. And again, it's the Message version. Oh, may the God of green hope fill you up with joy, fill you up with peace, so that your believing lives, filled with the life-giving energy of the Holy Spirit, will brim over with hope. Okay, and then I'm going to close this with a prayer.
Thank you.
Holy One, why me, why here? To fall in love with myself, with my clan, with the pileated woodpecker dressed in a crimson-plumed headdress, and especially with you, God, to manifest in my unique way a spark of the divine in my time and space, to reveal that I'm more than dust, I am a soul, to accomplish something worthy with the soft muscle of my heart, to slip a word of hope into every conversation, to be a tuning fork, maybe help work a miracle or two, to duel with fear and walk away champion, to remember the last always goes first, the servant before the crown, and humbly take my place in line, to be a wellspring of peace, first finding it within, nurturing it, then breathing it out into the world, to become a gourmand of grace, to tie my apron about me, use every pot and pan in my cupboard, set a beautiful table for a multitude, and spend my life nourishing souls, to take every glory experience, even the ones that break my heart, and allow them to transform me into your emissary of love, your ambassador of hope. Amen.
Amen. That was beautiful. Farrell, thank you so much. This has
Carrie,
been amazing.
Thank you for having me.
I think I'm going to listen to this again and again when I need hope and your beautiful, soothing voice to go with it.
Thank you.
This has been such a gift. Thank you.
Thank you.
Friends, thank you so much for tuning in today. I'm so grateful to have you here. And if you enjoyed the show, please follow the Girl Mom Podcast on iTunes or wherever you listen, and leave a ratings or review so others can find these messages too. Also, my new book for moms called More Than a Mom, How Prioritizing Your Wellness Helps You and Your Family Thrive, is now available everywhere books are sold. This book is for girl moms and boy moms and full of encouragement no matter what season of parenting you're in. Find the link to this book and my other books in the show notes. Thanks again for your support, and have a great day.